This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We go out now to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We welcome Howard Beck. Now, I know it's another show, another podcast that does the What Up Beck, but I'll be happy to do it. How are you, Howard?
Good morning, guys.
All right, great to have you on right now. And I got to ask you, as you know, we all watched last night, and it seems like Cavs' emotions also, it's a roller coaster for them that goes up and down, not only with the Cavs series, but also with the Warriors series. And Cavs fans feeling a lot better about maybe their chances to possibly go the distance now that that series is a dogfight out west and that Houston has been able to show some weaknesses with Golden State.
I don't know if Houston has shown weaknesses with Golden State. I think Houston's just a really good team. I mean, look, they won 65 games in the regular season. They had one of the best offenses and one of the best defenses. They've got the kind of players who can switch across all five spots and push the Warriors' offense, which is usually so dynamic, into some discomfort, some stagnation. You know, the Rockets are uniquely fitted to do so because of the kind of personnel they have. Guys like P.J. Tucker, guys like Trevor Ariza, a center like Clint Capella, guys who can switch and stay in front of guys and make the Warriors, as I say, just kind of lose their rhythm and push them into some one-on-one play. You know, the Warriors, their assist rate is way down over the last couple of games. They're not moving the ball the way we're used to seeing it. And so if you've got the personnel that can do that, great. But between the Cavs and the Celtics, I think the Celtics have that kind of personnel with the bodies they have and the mobility and agility of those guys. I don't think the Cavs have that. So I understand, like, if you're a Cavaliers fan, anything you see out west where the Warriors are struggling or maybe the Warriors don't even make it seems hopeful. I don't see that. I think the Warriors had a bad run last night, especially in the fourth quarter. That was a winnable game for them still, and we'd be having a different conversation if they were up 3-1, which, you know, we're talking about a possession or two of difference. The Warriors are still as talented, as potent a team as we've ever seen in this era. And so, and the fact is, look, if the Cavs make the finals, I hate to be the downer here on Cleveland Radio, if the Cavs make the finals, look, the Rockets or Warriors, whichever it is still going to be rightfully heavily favored.
Okay, Howard.
Yeah, thanks a lot,
yeah,
Howard.
But you'd have to agree that Steph Curry's beard is
horrible.
I mean,
you knew what
you
were doing when you called me. So
we knew what we were getting ourselves into. It's like Airplane.
Yeah. It's
okay.
I say let the interview crash. Howard Beck joining us on the show. Okay, so I want to go back to this series here in the Eastern Conference Finals. The first two games, people were hammering Ty Lue. I mean, just outrageously hammering Ty Lue, saying that he should have been fired during the series. And then the last two games, gosh, we had some people on yesterday, respected people, people we consider friends of these shows, Howard, and they said, the honeymoon's over for Brad Stevens. There's no Aaron Baines, and what's with the switching? And I'm thinking, man, I have a Boston team that's lost its two best players because of injury. You have a Cleveland team that lost their second best player because of a trade and wouldn't have him anyway because of an injury, and you've had a bunch of trades where you really don't trust these guys playing with LeBron. So I think both coaches are dealing with haves and have-nots in either series where now we're just arguing because, yeah, they might be still pushing the right buttons or trying to, but they're going to lose games because of what they don't have in the series.
Blaming coaching is like the it's like the lashing out method of last resort for fans. And, you know, look, some people in the media too are clearly guilty of it, but it's basically, if I think your team had the better shot, or if your team has LeBron and therefore is always favored and you lose, it must be the coaching. And in the Celtics case, the whiplash from the Brad Stevens is a coaching god to Brad Stevens' flaw. I mean, I didn't even hear that. I was not aware that people were really coming down on Brad Stevens that hard.
Oh, no, I didn't expect you to. It's just we were asking in two people. One of them, Chris Mannix, said, yeah, the honeymoon's over. And we're going, wow, it's over? I think they've really overachieved this season. This is amazing.
Yeah, listen, coaching, first of all, coaching is not about a single out-of-timeout play. It's not about a single quarter in the middle of game three of the conference finals, and it's not about any one series or any one matchup or any one adjustment. Coaching is about the whole of it, from the first day of training camp all the way through to whenever your season ends. And it involves all those tactical decisions and substitutions. It also involves ego management and expectation management and practice agendas and all kinds of other things. So when we boil it down simplistically to, well, they just lost this game and Ty Lue made the better adjustments, therefore Brad Stevens got out coached. I mean, come on. And there are adjustments that make differences, obviously. Otherwise, we wouldn't need coaches. And the strategy does matter. But generally speaking, in the NBA, the team with the best talent wins. Now, we are watching a conference finals in the East, at least, where there's no clear advantage, right? Like, the Cavs have the advantage in that they've got one of the greatest players of all time. The Celtics have a better overall collection of talent and better fitting talent. And how those two things offset each other, you know, we see play out night to night, and that's why the series is tied 2-2. Like, neither team really is complete. So coaching can matter, of course. The matchups can matter. But both these guys also have limited options. Like Ty Lue's had to go to basically like 7.3 guys in his rotation because there's just a bunch of guys he can't even trust right now. And the Celtics have had a bunch of injuries rob them of depth, which they didn't have a ton of in the first place. So, you know, when you start nitpicking over, how a one particular matchup went or how you tried to adjust to it or counter-adjust, it's not like they have a wealth of options at their disposal. And it's all in the moment. I think people should, maybe settle down on the coaching dissections.
Howard Beck, join us on the hotline. Help me out here, Howard, because I said after the first two games where the Cavs were down, I said, boy, this team has shown no identity throughout the season. They've been Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. I get they've had all the different players in and out, a rotation of those, a team that was basically reduced to a whole new roster at the trade deadline. We never see anything like that. And I feel like over the last two games, they have found some of that identity. Do you agree?
I'm sorry, say that again?
That the Cavs have found some of that identity over the last two games at home.
I mean, as soon as we say that, you know, something else can happen. The wheels come off, and then we wonder where it went. And I'm not predicting that's going to happen. I'm just saying that the, everything about the Cavaliers' season has been fairly unpredictable, just hard to gauge, hard to figure out. Like, they're not an easy team to read, in large part because they've made so many changes along the way. And the group that's playing now, I mean, this is not even – I don't know that the rotation that they're even using right now, the seven guys – if that had even been the primary seven at any given point because of changes and injuries over the course of the season. Like, it's taken them a long time just to get to a point where they go, oh, okay, this is the group we should use and the combinations we should use them in. So I don't know it's getting back to anything. It's a different team in so many ways. But what they have found, which maybe shouldn't be surprising, is that the group that's most reliable are the guys who are older, more experienced, have been around, have played together, have been in finals together, with the exception of, you know, plugging in, you know, a Larry Nance or a George Hill. And George Hill at least has had, you know, extensive postseason experience, been in a couple of conference finals, you know, obviously playing against LeBron back in when LeBron was in Miami and George Hill was in Indy.
I've had mixed answers on this, so I just want to see where you stand. Kyrie's not able to play in this series. They've been very successful this year, even without him. Is there some little part of him? Everybody likes success, but is there some little part of him that wishes that they were a little bit more reliant on Kyrie? Don't you want to be a part of that success?
Is Kyrie feeling like it's uncomfortable that they're succeeding without him?
A little bit.
I mean, I think it's – I would love to be able to you know, peer inside his head just because it's his old team versus his new team, and both teams are in the conference finals without him. Although without his contributions for the 60 games he played for the Celtics, you know, maybe they don't make it this far because the record's different and all that. I don't know. I don't know Kyrie Irving's personality makeup well enough to know. I think for any of these guys, it's tough. I mean, if you're Gordon Hayward and you were like the marquee signing before the trade for Kyrie, and you're looking at Tatum and Brown and the rest of this crew doing great. I mean, how's it affecting him? I mean, I think in general, if you like your team, which they probably do, you're just happy that they're thriving, and you're thinking, man, when we come back, we're winning 67 games next season. I mean, that's the scary part for anybody else in the Eastern Conference. The Celtics are doing all this without the guys who are arguably their two best players, and assuming that they're back to full health in the fall, you know, that's an incredibly deep and scary rotation.
Howard Beck joined us on the hotline. I want to ask you about ISO ball. Steve Kerr had a comment last night after the loss where he said, you know, yeah, we moved the ball really well, but also in this league, you have to have times when ISO ball, when you have the right players, can make a difference. We saw that in 2016 with Kyrie and LeBron. A lot of ISO ball in that game, in Game 7, and they were able to withstand it and win and come back down from 3-1. What would you say about the state of the game right now with a lot of this ISO ball, especially out west?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I wrote about Mike D'Antoni, you know, a week and a half ago, whenever that story ran right before the conference finals started, about the fact that Mike D'Antoni, who had been, you know, the most zealous proponent of, you know, ball movement and pace and the ball finds energy, as he likes to say, and his son's teams were all about moving the ball. And here he is, you know, he was somebody who always shunned isolation play and post play. And here he is, you know, coaching a team to 65 wins, relying a ton on isolation play. And now Steve Kerr is kind of like saying, you know, I guess this is where we are. I mean, the league tried to get away from too much isolation play and stagnant offense with all the rules changes they made in the early to mid-2000s because everything had become guys going one-on-one while eight other guys stood on the other side of the court watching. That's why they got rid of the illegal defense rules. And so it's a strange irony that we're having this discussion now, but it's born out of a new innovation, which is not new, but it is more widespread now, in that everybody's now switching the pick and roll. It just became a big pick and roll league, and the answer to a ton of pick and roll and three-point shooting was switch all the pick and rolls, switch all the defensive assignments, because that's how you nullify the advantages. And if you've got the defenders who can do that, well, now all of a sudden, you've created a one-on-one. You've created an isolation play. Short answer is you have to be able to do both in this league. I think it's always been the case. Ball movement looks better, gets more guys involved. It's more fun to watch. It's a better brand of offense in my mind. But every offensive set, every perfectly designed play, something's going to break down, and then you need to rely on isolation abilities to get a shot off. And that's why you want a Kevin Durant on your team, which they didn't have when they lost to Cleveland in the finals. That's why you want a LeBron and a Kyrie. You know, so all the greatest offenses in the world are fine, and they're needed for the most part. That format's needed, but sometimes, yeah, great teams, great defenses are going to push you out of that, and then you need somebody who can just kind of manufacture out of thin air. So for the Warriors, that the thing is, they just don't want to be doing that too much. They've relied way too much on the isolation play, especially last night. Obviously, in the fourth quarter, they got bogged down, but that whole game, I think they were bogged down. And for Houston, they welcome it because that's become who they are. Is Harden or Chris Paul taking their guy?
What's the percent chance the Cavaliers could win against the Houston Rockets in the NBA Finals?
I mean, they got to get out of the conference finals first, right?
Oh my goodness. Come on, Howard. I'm trying to get you off on a positive note here with us. You just won't allow me to do it.
I think a Rockets-Cavs finals would be fascinating. I think the Cavs certainly would have a better shot against the Rockets. I mean, look, people would say by definition if the Rockets beat the Warriors and the Rockets are the tougher team, but we all know it's matchups, and it's also, you know, if they do it, it's going to be by the slimmest of margins probably. I would rather face a team with, you know, James Harden and Chris Paul, and that be the what I have to concentrate on defensively and trying to figure out how to negate one or both of them, or at least make them work, than trying to deal with Steph Curry and Kevin Durant and what Klay Thompson brings and what Draymond Green brings. Sometimes it is as easy as just counting heads of all-stars. So do the Cavs have a better shot against the Rockets than the Warriors? I would say so. I think that would actually be a pretty good series.
All right, Howard, we thank you
very
much.
That's positive.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So wait a minute. Do you think the Cavaliers win tonight, or how many games does this series go?
I said before the series started, I didn't put it in print anywhere, but I think I said it on my own podcast, that I thought Cavs-Celtics would go 7, and I actually said Cavs in 7. I like the idea of LeBron winning a Game 7 at the Garden. We've seen him win big games there before. I think he's fully capable of it. I do feel like if there is any such thing as momentum in the playoffs, and that's always a kind of a nebulous thing, that the Cavs certainly seem like they have it right now. But I could see this playing to form the next couple of games. Celtics win at home. Cavs come back, win at home. And then it's game seven.
All right, Howard, we thank you very much, my friend. That's much better. Thank you very much. Take care.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
Howard Beck of the Bleacher Report on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Coming up next, game five. Lima says they win. I don't think so. I think it's going seven games. I got to agree with Howard, but I wouldn't bet against the Cavaliers. And I wouldn't bet against LeBron and the Cavaliers in game seven. And are we having Jeff in? Will Jeff come in?
We'll find out. I'm being told we have a thumbs up.
All right. Jeff Phelps.
Carmen versus Phelps versus Lima.
No. The three-way
handicap match.
Coming up next on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.